Hey everyone, and welcome to At the Letters for Wednesday, August 21st, 2024. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you, joined by Arden Swelling. Arden, how's it going today?
Not bad. We're into that portion of the season where, I'm not going to lie, it is a little bit of a grind. It is a little bit of Groundhog Day, and you are pulled in a million different directions at this time of year. And I think that's not just the case for us, but the case for the players as well. And obviously layering in a season where you're basically playing the rest of these games out of obligation to a 162-game schedule adds a bit of a different element to it as well. But, we're all busy. We've all got stressful jobs. So how you doing?
Good. Yeah, like you say, it's a busy it's a busy stretch. Like, even because the baseball season's always busy, there's never really a time where it's like chill for that long. But this second half of August, they play every single day, and then there's a doubleheader in Boston Monday, which I'll be at. Actually kind of fascinated by that, but it's a lot. I do think that what we said last week holds up, where this team has been actually more compelling than they have been at various times this season. They're 9-8 in August. They're actually playing some decent baseball. There's still reasons for intrigue, but they're in a spot where it's trying to get a sense of what this team can be in 2025. And I almost think that when you look particularly at the rotation for this period of time, we're getting a sense of what kind of the best case scenario rotation could look like for the Blue Jays. Maybe not best because, Kevin Gausman's stuff is in decline. It's not as though Jose Berríos has been completely consistent for the last couple of months, for sure. But you're seeing Yariel Rodriguez get acclimated to the major leagues. You're seeing Bowden Francis put together his best stretch as a major league starting pitcher. And so you can kind of see the pieces coming together for what a good outcome would be for this rotation in 2025.
You can also paint a dour picture, though, too, can't you, Ben? And you kind of teased at it a little bit there. I mean, Kevin Gausman's stuff just has not been the same this year, and he's been pretty open in talking about how he hasn't been able to find his delivery at all this year. He's had to make a ton of adjustments. Some of them have worked, some of them haven't. Some of them have only worked for a short period of time before they haven't worked again. Like, I think that he's been pretty frustrated by the way this season has gone, and that goes all the way back to literally the beginning of spring training and just like how things went from the jump for him. It's a funny reminder that, like, spring training, while we kind of roll our eyes sometimes at it, it is very important for starting pitchers. And if you're a starting pitcher and you get behind the eight ball in spring training in terms of just where you're at physically or your delivery or, any number of things, you can spend the next 6 months chasing that, and you can lose an entire season just based on how you started it. So there's the Gausman of it all. There's the fact that Jose Berríos' stuff has clearly not been the same at points this year. And we just watched him on Tuesday night in an outing where he barely threw his breaking ball at all, which is kind of hard to believe for a guy like Jose Berríos, whose slurve can be so electric when it's working. But he did not have a feel for it on Tuesday, and he really just had to focus on throwing fastballs and changeups. And thankfully, that was enough against Cincinnati Reds, but I think that against other lineups, like, that would put him in a really tough spot if he just doesn't have his curveball on a certain night. You look at Chris Bassitt, who's coming off of two starts that are almost impossible to analyze. Two starts ago where he was just unable to locate, leaving stuff up in the zone and dealing with the elements of a closed stadium, as he said. And then in a start following in Chicago where he's dealing with the elements in a different way, where he has two rain delays. So, like, I could go on with Yariel Rodriguez leaving way too many breaking pitches up in the zone. Like, I'm not trying to be negative here. I'm not trying to start it on this poor foot. But I do think that for as much as you can paint like a really optimistic picture of this rotation going forward, you can also envision a lot of scenarios where things don't go very well and the Blue Jays have some starting pitching issues next year.
Okay, so we both agree then that if they're going to try to win, they're going to need to add some starting pitching this offseason. And, I mean, you could also make a case that I'm not opposed to, that they should actually sell and, retool and reposition themselves and gear up for 2026. Like, I'm not firmly decided one way or the other. There's a lot of baseball to be played. So that's something that I would be open to be honest. And I think it's something that Mark Shapiro should at least be open to. And Ross Atkins, as they plan what's next here. But if you're going to try to win, you need to add more starting pitching. And look, even if you're not, even if you decide, hey, we're going to be open to trading a Bobichet, we're going to be open to maybe trading some of a Bassett or a Gausman this offseason, you still need to backfill. You still need to have a serviceable major league team. So actually, regardless, you're going to be in that starting pitching market.
And so much of this just gets back to how thin the depth is internally for the Blue Jays and just the lack of success stories that they've had coming out of their minor league system, particularly when it comes to pitching development. And look, they've had a lot of really tough injury setbacks there. When you think about a Tiedemann, a Marudis, a Barriera, a Manoa, all going down to major surgeries, nothing you can do about that. Pitchers break and you can't control when they do. And sometimes they all break at once. So that's tough. But the Blue Jays have also struggled to produce even just capable back end types, right? Like the TJ Zoiks, the Thomas Hatches, the Anthony Kays. I mean, just all of these products of the Blue Jays system who didn't turn out for one reason or another. Like that lack of depth shows up in, as you're saying, projecting out towards 2025 and being like, man, like if we have another hit in this rotation with an injury, or like if some of our guys who are getting into their mid-30s, you know, suffer a steep decline, that safety net just isn't there. Like that upward pressure just isn't there from within the system. So, you know, a lot of like what has put the Blue Jays in a really tough position going forward just gets back to their drafting and their development and just the outcomes that they've had from within their system. And that's a really complicated thing. There are a ton of factors that play into that, but the outcomes the Blue Jays have had have just not been good enough to really like sustain success and put the team in a position where you can say, yeah, you know, even if a couple things go badly for the Blue Jays in 2025, they should still be okay. Like as it stands right now, it'll all change between now and spring training, but as it stands right now, the margin for error with this roster, particularly on the pitching side, is going to be very, very thin.
And look, if you're describing the season and you're saying that the Blue Jays season was undercut in some ways by the underperformance of the bullpen, by the injuries to the bullpen, this is a point that Mark Shapiro made earlier this month. He pointed to the bullpen right away. And if you're using that to describe what's happened, sure. If it's more used as like a justification, then it doesn't really land with me, because the job of an organization is to make sure that you have enough pitching depth, and so that you're not, we all know bullpens are volatile. You don't want to be in a position where a little bit of volatility to the negative end of things derails a season. You need to have that depth, and that needs to come from drafting and development. But, you know, we could spend, you know, all day on that, and I'm sure we'll return to that subject as the summer progresses here. But I did want to touch on one of the newsy topics of this week, Arden, and one that you were closely involved with, because you and Shadavidi spoke to Chris Bassett after he made some comments on a podcast on the Chris Rose rotation that generated a lot of controversy.
How do we explain this to Blue Jay fans? Where did it go wrong?
I'll say this. I think we do a lot of things right here, but like, I don't want to identify the problems, because some of the problems I don't think are fixable. The one thing I will say about the Blue Jays for this year, we put, I think, $700 million into Shohei Ohtani's basket and didn't get him. We really didn't have a pivot. This is the reality of the landscape, is that you need three or four superstars. We have to get more hitting to protect Vladdy, and then the pitching has to be a lot better. There's so many things that you could talk about. I mean, I could literally talk for 45 minutes on this of things that didn't go great, but again, I just don't think saying those things publicly is what is best for this organization.
I want to hear your thoughts on how all that unfolded. You and Shai spoke to him. You and I and Shai have spoken to others since then to try to get a sense of, you know, what this all means, if anything. But what's your take on it all?
It's interesting because it kind of depends on how you first kind of consumed these comments, because it plays very differently when you see it in a 1 minute heavily edited video that like is piecing together a bunch of clips from a much more long form conversation into a really just like bite-sized chunk that then is presented on like a social media platform that is literally designed to manipulate people's emotions. So like, if you see it that way, I understand if your interpretation was that this was a lot more dour, I guess, than it actually was. Now, if you consumed it as just listening to the hour-long podcast and you just heard Chris providing the context that he did there and kind of just speaking with a bit more nuance and just having more of his perspective involved, you probably interpreted it a different way. For me, speaking extremely personally, I have direct access to Chris Bassett, which I took advantage of on Monday along with Shai to go speak to him. So my perspective, my viewpoint on this is very much colored by that and the like half an hour that Shai and I spent with Chris, not just talking about this, but like talking about a ton in the game. And like, you know this, Ben, like Chris Bassett can speak really eloquently at length with a ton of like nuance and consideration about such a wide array of topics. And so Shai and I talked to him about like the Chris Rose interview for, I don't know, 10 minutes. And then we spent way more time. Honestly, this might've been like a 45-minute conversation. We were there for a while and a lot of it was on the record. A lot of it was off the record. A lot of it was just kind of shooting the breeze. But we talked about a ton of things with regards to the game. We talked about rule changes. We talked about the possibility of a 6-inning minimum for starters. We talked about where he's at physically right now. We talked about union matters. You know, we talked about the relationship between players and front office and union and league. We talked about pitcher welfare. Like, we just talked about a whole host of things. So I feel like my bias in this from just having that access to Bassett is to probably see it a bit more from his perspective, but I don't want to make it seem like I'm admonishing anyone who saw those comments and thought like, whoa, this is salacious, because I understand with the way that they were presented and maybe even the way that he didn't explain them as fully as I'm sure he wanted to on the podcast. Like, I understand if it came across that way.
For me, being totally honest, I honestly, it seemed like he was holding back on the podcast. It seemed like he would have said way more if he was being fully candid. Now, we're not, as much as we might like for athletes to be candid, they are often not. And they're often not candid because of this exact reason. If they start being remotely candid, people eat it up. They're really curious about it. And it becomes a little mini firestorm for a day or two. And, you know, it definitely catches the attention of people within the organization. And I don't think it was Chris Bassett's intention to, you know, light a flame under the Blue Jays organization here and make them look bad at all. But in some ways, it kind of did make them look bad. And to that extent, that's not ideal. But I think he was holding back. I think he probably could have said way more stuff if he was really being fully honest. And it's probably, it goes a long way toward explaining why athletes operate in cliches, because when they don't, we're really curious to hear what they actually think. And Chris Bassett came sort of close to saying what he actually thinks here. And, you know, you'll talk to some people who say, maybe that's not a good idea. But as someone who's interested in knowing these things, I can't help but sort of applaud the candor.
Yeah, and Chris was frustrated with the way that his comments were interpreted, with the way that they were presented by a number of places that picked up on them, with the way that, and like this is his word, people took them to the quote extreme. And look, I enter every interaction with good faith. So like I take him at his word because he said these things to my face. He didn't mean to, or he wasn't trying to, he didn't intend to, he didn't want to knock the front office. He went on at length with Shai and I about like just how much actually respect he has for Ross and the job that he does. He said he would never want to have Ross's job because of how hard it is. He said that the Blue Jays treat families as well as any organization in baseball. He said like very directly, this is a front office that has the ambition to win, that wants to do everything it can to build a winner. I've spoken to people with the organization in the last couple of days just to ask, hey, like, how did this land with you? Like, what was kind of the fallout with you? And they've said like, yeah, we followed up with Chris and we had conversations with him and we said, hey, like, is there anything you want to get out in the open? Is there any air we can clear here? Like, is there anything you want to say to us? And they said that he said all those same things to them, you know, like the how much he values that the organization identified him as someone that they want to build around. You know, like, I know that there was a ton of speculation around Chris Bassett at the trade deadline, but he knew for like well in advance of the deadline that he was not going to be traded. Like, he was told that very directly, and that meant a lot to him, that because he knows that he would have had value in trade and there would have been teams that would have been happy to take him on. And look, if the Blue Jays moved off of a guy who's going to be 36 next year, as he pointed out, and said like, hey, like, your value is really high right now, like, maybe the right baseball value thing to do is to move on from you and cash you in for prospects, like, I think that would have been justified from a cold, hard, calculated baseball viewpoint. But the Blue Jays told Chris, like, no, you're somebody who we want in our environment. You're somebody who we want to build around. Now, the other thing that Chris made very clear to me and Shai is that he's frustrated, is that he came here to win a World Series. He came here to win, as a lot of Blue Jays did, and things haven't gone well this year. And it feels like a lot of the things that haven't gone well have been out of the Blue Jays' control. And that was one of Chris's points when it comes to injuries, or when it comes to a shallow free agent class beyond, obviously, like, a unicorn free agent who the Blue Jays pursued and failed to recruit. Like, all those things were frustrating to Chris and his teammates. And then having to go through the trade deadline process of seeing, like, a lot of your friends and a lot of your close teammates be traded away, that was a highly emotional time, as you know, Ben. Like, you were around it. Like, that was not a fun few days for a lot of Blue Jays. I think that Chris's comments came, a lot of it came from that frustration, which he expressed to Shai and I, and which he was, like, pretty direct and pretty clear about, and which I think he has also expressed internally to the front office, to the coaching staff. Because look, as he said, he's another year older, and Kevin Gausman's another year older, and those guys came here to win. Justin Turner told me directly earlier this year, I was only talking to teams that I believed could win a World Series, and that I thought were all in on winning a World Series. I was not going to, I wouldn't have played. Like, I wouldn't have come back. I would not have, like, signed with a, and I, these are my words, not his, Pittsburgh Pirates or the Oakland Athletics or an LA Angels. And I think Chris was the same way when he was a free agent. I think he eliminated any team that wasn't in a win now posture and a we are putting all of our chips into winning a World Series today posture. So I think that the outcomes that the Blue Jays have had the last couple of years have been very frustrating. And I'm sure that some of that frustration boils over when people ask him, hey, what went wrong? Why hasn't this worked out?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, like, on the other hand, man, like, it's just rarely in any industry at any time is it a great idea when you're speaking publicly about your bosses to go say, like, yeah, they didn't have a pivot. They didn't have a plan. And I know that I'm sure that wasn't his intention, but it's what he said.
And but he didn't say they didn't have a plan. I mean, his point was that there wasn't, like, a realistic pivot that would have been as impactful as signing Shohei Ohtani.
Right.
Which is fair.
Which is clear, but...
And look, I've had, like, it's been interesting, right? Because just as the Bassett comments have spurred a lot of conversations, like, externally, they've spurred a lot of conversations internally as well. And you and I are involved in some of those. I just talk to people around the ballpark. And I had somebody say to me yesterday, you know, there's only, like, 12 people on this earth who actually know the full encapsulation of what happened to us this offseason, and how many things were actually in play, and how many things weren't, and how many trades were on the table, and how far we got with certain free agents, and how realistic it was that Shohei Ohtani would come here. Like, this is one of those 12 people who said that. And look, like, the reality is, like, we don't know everything about the Blue Jays offseason. I can sit here and say they didn't do enough to address their offense. I think that much is clear. But I also, coming into the season, said, yeah, like, I think there's a way the Blue Jays could get into a wild card spot. So I'm also not going to sit here and say, I knew this was doomed. I told you all this was doomed. Of course, this is what happened. Because that's not what I was saying coming in. I was saying, yeah, you know, if they get some, if things go right, like, this can definitely be a playoff team. A lot of things went wrong instead. And clearly the Blue Jays should have done more to add power to their offense in the offseason. But I also can't tell you everything that they tried to do in the offseason. I know what their intention was. I don't know all of their actions. Like, we know some of it from having conversations and asking around, but we don't know all of it. You know, I can tell you that the Blue Jays didn't like Cody Bellinger as much as some other teams, and that they weren't going to give him the same value that the Chicago Cubs did. I can tell you that the Blue Jays liked Matt Chapman at the value that the San Francisco Giants gave him, and that they offered him that same deal. Although, from talking to Matt himself, like, that offer came in somewhat late in the process, and Matt was already pretty convinced or pretty committed to going back to where he was most comfortable on the West Coast. So, like, I could tell you those things. I know those things, but there's plenty about this offseason that I don't know. So I'm always kind of hesitant with just like how convicted I am and saying, oh, the Blue Jays had this terrible offseason. Like, I think there's a ton of circumstances that play into these things and a lot of nuance there.
To me, I do feel confident saying they had a bad offseason. They did. Like, to me, it's a fact. Now, that being said, I'm totally with you in saying that at the outset of this season, you can go back and listen to At the Letters, and you can find me saying that I thought they had a real shot to be a playoff team. Probably a wild card team, I think I would have said, just given the Yankees and Orioles. But I thought the Jays had a real shot, and we weren't alone in saying that. If you look at the entire media landscape, the entire baseball media landscape, look at the projections, which had the Blue Jays definitely as a fringe playoff team going into this season. So it was not... You know, we were not alone in thinking that. And I think that fans certainly had optimism about this team internally. The players, of course, they believed that they would be able to do this. So it's a great point to say that it's not as though this was all foretold on Sportsnet.ca on March 15th that they were doomed. You know, that was not the way it worked. But at the same time, like, looking at it now, I think that we don't need to know. And I spent a lot of time and a lot of energy and had a lot of conversations reporting on the off season to the extent that I possibly could last winter. So I think I have a pretty good idea of what went down to an extent. You're never going to have a full picture, but end of the day, you don't have to be any sort of reporter or any sort of insider to know what happened, right? We all know what happened. We all know what they actually did, and they can be judged on that. And what the job of an MLB front office is to come up with a plan and a vision and various contingencies and build the depth and adjust on the fly such that you can overcome the inevitable injuries, underperformances, and attrition that happens in the course of a baseball season. And the Jays just haven't done it. And we've spent a lot of time talking about that, and I'm not trying to hammer them in saying that, but that's just the fact of this season.
I think that in hindsight, I can sit here right now and say, yeah, they should have taken the Kiermaier money and IKF money and put it together and signed Teoscar Hernandez. But I wasn't saying that at the time. I can look back right now and say, yeah, the Blue Jays should have outbid the San Francisco Giants to the extent that, you know, Matt Chapman would have gone away from the environment he wanted to be in to return to Toronto. But I wasn't saying that at the time, and I don't remember a lot of people towards the end of 2023 pining for Matt Chapman to return after the way that his season played out from May on. Anything that I could say about the Blue Jays offseason right now would just be in hindsight. Clearly, they didn't do enough, but like I am also sympathetic to the argument that there wasn't a ton for them to do. But like your point is well taken that it's a front office's job to be creative and to find solutions to really complex problems. And there are no more dumb GMs or dumb front offices that you can just take advantage of and exploit. Like, you have to really be an outside the box thinker, and you have to really get creative if you're going to try to be better than the Cashmans and Chernoffs and Prellers and, you know, the Zaidis and et cetera, right? You know, the Friedmans. Yeah. Like, it's really, really intelligent people are running baseball teams, and really, really value-oriented, good, strong negotiators are involved in these discussions. Like, it's part of the reason why Chris told Ross, I would never want to have your job. I do not want to do what you do because it is massively difficult. So, like, I, you know, there's a lot at play here. If you just listen to the podcast, the comments that Chris made were like relatively benign and like pretty true in the whole. And everybody's going to ascribe various interpretations to them, and that's totally fair. But I'm going to take Chris at his word from what he told Shai and I that, you know, when he talked about the pivot, he just meant there was not a realistic pivot that would be as good as Ohtani. And when he talks about unfixable problems, it is that the Blue Jays suffered a whole host of injuries, had a season go awry that is resulting in everyone being a year older. All those things suck, and all those things are outside of the Blue Jays' control.
And look, I mean, part of the job description, because, you know, I stand by what I said earlier, and that you're rarely going to advance, you know, your standing by, you know, openly criticizing your bosses, no matter how valid the criticism is. That's usually, you know, probably safest to keep that behind closed doors. But hey, counter to that is this is Major League Baseball. There's a huge media appetite. There's a huge fan appetite for information. You know, Chris Bassitt doesn't work for Honda Canada or, you know, whatever the case. He works in a very, very public-facing role. And so part of the challenge for Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro or John Schneider is they need to have a thick skin. They got to roll with this stuff. And I think they will. I actually, you know, we're talking about it now, and I think it's really interesting. But honestly, I think these guys are over it. Like, I think within a day or two, it'll be forgotten. They'll move on to something else. And it's do you agree? Because I think that's just kind of how baseball works.
Yeah, and we don't realize that this is only like a topic within this weird tiny little bubble of the world, right? Like the Toronto Blue Jays universe. You know, out like, does like Ben, does your dad know about the comments that Chris Bassitt made on the podcast?
It's a good question.
And the fallout.
I'd say 50-50.
Yeah, my mom like follows the Blue Jays really closely, watches every game. I'm not certain she would really know. She might have she'll hear me talking about it on this podcast, but I'm not sure that she would like before that actually know that there was a bit of an outrage and on, you know, in certain corners of the fan base. I'm just not sure.
We're very online.
The other thing I'm not sure about is like if the Blue Jays had, okay, take the KK and IKF money and bring in a Teoscar Hernandez and like, I don't know, what else could they have done? Like, you want to give Jorge Soler 4 years and have Ben Nicholson Smith criticizing you to hell and high water.
I would have resigned on the spot. No, I'm just joking. I wouldn't have resigned. Just kidding. You know, Jorge Soler is a fine baseball player, by the way. But, you know, anyway, we can.
This pivot that people, this great idea that people had in mind, you're going to give Jamer Candelario 4 years, like whatever the alternative was, would that have compensated for George Springer being the worst qualified hitter in baseball halfway through the season? Would that have compensated for Bo Bichette having just an absolute disaster write-off of a season where he's going to finish with like a negative war? Would that have compensated for the fact that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. didn't hit at all for the first month and then only hit singles for the second month? I'm not sure. Would that have compensated for the entire back end of the bullpen blowing up? I'm really not sure that the Blue Jays, even if they had gone out and splashed a ton of money on a reliever, which I don't know who was the reliever on this market that you were going to be splashing that money on, would that have compensated for the fact that Jordan Romano had surgery and Eric Swanson had an absolute disaster of a year and Tim Mazza was unpitchable, et cetera? I don't know. I don't know if that really would have overcome a lot of the things that went wrong for the Blue Jays internally.
I do think that there would have been pathways to make the Blue Jays a good team this year. I do think that would have been possible. But let me throw this at you real quick. Do you think if the Blue Jays had somehow landed Shohei Ohtani, would they be a playoff team right now?
That's a great question. It's one that I think about, honestly. It's one I've considered a number of times. I don't know. Because like it's not just the impact of his however many wins above replacement he has. Yeah. Like it's the impact he would have on the hitters around him in the lineup. And I just
absolutely
don't know.
I think he would be, and I think culturally he would be a really positive influence just because he works so hard and he's so good and he would make the other players happier and better. But yeah, and he's a 6-win player on WAR. So if you add 6 wins to the Jays total, they're 65-62, which would put them, you know, as a fringy team. But I think other things, and they wouldn't have sold, and I think they would be a playoff team. I think would be.
There would have been so many cascading effects. Like, what does the rest of their offseason look like? You know, like if they sign Ohtani, because then the rest of their offseason plays out completely differently.
You're not signing Justin Turner.
Yeah, right. Their urgency earlier in the year and halfway through the year when their bullpen started blowing up would probably have been a bit different. They would have made a lot more money, I can tell you that much, but I don't actually know how much of an impact it would have had on outcomes. Can I clarify one more thing? Just go very quickly, and I shouldn't even do this, but like, I saw the Bassett thing midday on Monday, and I was like, oh, okay, I know what I'm talking to Chris Bassett about tonight. And I got to the ballpark and walked in the clubhouse at 3 o'clock when it opened, and Shai was walking in at the same time, and I looked at Shai and Shai looked at me, and I was like, I bet you're looking to talk to Bassett. And he was like, I bet you're looking to talk to Bassett. And they're like, yep, okay. And so we went and we sought out Chris Bassett and talked to him for 45 minutes. Chris Bassett did not contact us. Blue Jays PR did not contact us. Rogers PR, Mark Shapiro did not call me in the middle of the day and say, hey, you've got to go massage this thing and clean up this mess for me. Like, again, I shouldn't even be like interacting with these absurd conspiracy theories, but I just want to say it like very directly and very clearly that Shai and I were doing our jobs, and we showed up that day both with the intent of talking to Bassett and clarifying his remarks and getting more insight from him. And I am very appreciative to Chris of giving us that time as well, because he gave us a lot of time he didn't have to. We pulled him aside in his day. He was covered in ice when we got him. So I don't know if he had like just thrown aside or just had a workout or what, but he had like one of those huge like ice packs on his shoulder and his arm the entire time that we were talking to him. And as you know, Ben, like sometimes you go and you talk to Chris Bassett and you think you've got this like really interesting idea and concept to throw at him, and you walk away feeling like an idiot, and he just like gives you very short answers. And it's true, man. And like reminds you that you know very little about pitching, about baseball. Sometimes you go in and you offer something kind of innocuous and benign, and he speaks like really eloquently at length and really expands your understanding of something, right? Like it kind of goes both ways with him. And he was like really candid and thoughtful with us, I thought. And it's not always the case when you're entering that lion's den. So I just wanted to make that clear that, you know, that's the machinery here. That's how this works. And I don't fault anybody who, you know, thinks whatever they want to think. Like, I don't know the mechanics of everybody's job, and I don't, you know, I don't assume that. I only know the mechanics of mine and of professional baseball players. So I just did want to make that clear.
Even though you guys, I wasn't there on Monday, but I knew without you guys saying that, that's how it would have unfolded. But that's probably a good thing to clarify broadly. We could also start a spin-off podcast where we debunk conspiracy theories about ourselves and the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, we'd have weekly episodes there for sure. So you know, maybe tune in for episodes of that podcast at some point soon. But in the meantime, we'll step aside here on At the Letters. We'll come back and we'll discuss some more of the storylines and developments around the Toronto Blue Jays. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to At the Letters. I honestly forget if I shouted out our producers in the first half, so let's do so now. Sho Ali is producing this. Nick Andrade also producing this. So thank you to Sho and to Nick for their work in putting together At the Letters on a weekly basis. And we'll continue coming to your feeds with opinion and our thoughts and reporting on the Jays as the season continues here. And Arden, to this point in the season, more than three quarters of the way in, we have not seen Joey Votto in the major leagues. And let's touch on this because it's been like 5 months since he signed, more than 5 months since he signed with the Blue Jays. And at the time, you and I were both there that day, that week in Dunedin, Florida, when he signed, and he was saying, I'm ready to ride buses. I'm just inspired. I'm here to be a minor leaguer. I'm here to earn my way onto the team. And little did we know, he would really put that willpower to the test and be in the minor leagues for an extended period of time. And here on Wednesday, Jay's about to conclude a series against Votto's longtime team, the Cincinnati Reds, and he's nowhere to be found. So what's your overall thought on this whole situation?
Would you say that, like, aside from maybe extending Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the most questions you've gotten this year have been about Joey Votto?
Ooh, yeah. The Votto questions from, like, friends who love the Jays, follow the Jays, I would say that is high on the list, yes.
I haven't done a definitive ranking, but it's very, very high for somebody who has not set foot on a major league field this year.
Another one on that level would be, are they going to fire Ross Atkins? Like, that is a question people ask. Are they going to extend Vlad Jr.? Are they going to call up Joey Votto? I think those are, and what are they going to do with the trade deadline? That was a big one. So those are kind of the big themes that have been ongoing this year.
That's the trifecta. Those have been the main protagonists of the Blue Jays season. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Ross Atkins, and Joey Votto. And two of them don't play for the team.
Gotta love sports.
And I remember going back to that week, and it's become like a bit of a running joke between me and one of the producers at Sportsnet who works on Blue Jays Central and on the broadcasts, because I remember he was producing our broadcast of the spring training game that day. And like I was kind of saying to him, like, man, we are going to talk about Joey Votto all year, aren't we? And there's just never going to be a payoff to this. And here we are. And he was producing the game this week when we talked about Joey Votto again. Look, throughout this entire thing, if you had just taken Joey Votto at his word, you would have had nothing to worry about, because his word was, I am here to earn my way to the major leagues.
I get to once again move towards, for the second time in my professional career, make it to the major leagues. And it excites me. It excites me to be in a hotel room in Florida and to take a shuttle or an Uber to the ballpark and to be a minor league player with an unknown number, just trying my very best to make a team. And it invigorates me. This is what I feel like I've been about, and it brings me great joy.
Joey, you describe yourself as a minor league player who's trying to try out for this team. That's probably not how a lot of people would view you.
Well, I am.
So can you expand on that and maybe explain like how you arrived at that mindset?
Right, I'm on a minor league contract. I'm in major league camp. I'm what's called a non-roster invite. Yeah. And I'm not on the major league roster. And so as I work and prep every single day, not only is that my attitude, but that's the reality of the scenario. And so the idea that I'm going to come in and presume anything is a disconnect from, again, reality, but mostly just what I'm about. I want to work, and I want to compete, and I want to fit in, and I want to get along with guys. I want to be liked, and I want to represent myself, my family, and my country well. And this is the perfect opportunity.
You know, that somewhere along the line, this turned into like this movie moment thing that people thought Joey wanted to have. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want to come up here to like wave to the crowd and to, you know, have this video board presentation and to, I don't know, do whatever. He wants to come up to play Major League Baseball as a competitive player. So he just hasn't gotten to that point yet from either a health or productivity standpoint. And until he does, you're not going to see him in the big leagues.
Right. And, you know, this is where I'll admit, like when I first heard those comments from him, I was like, what? Like, really? You're willing to ride buses? Like, this is a guy who won an MVP, 6 or 7 All-Star games, just incredible numbers, probably headed for the Hall of Fame, and he's made $260 million. And normally people in that demographic, socioeconomically speaking, they're just not riding buses to mid-sized Rust Belt cities all summer long. They're just not doing that. And Joey Votto has done that. He's doing that right now. But as you said, he's never given any indication that, oh, it's Canada Day, I want to be out there as some sort of like, I don't know, like a figurehead, a symbol, you know,
mascot.
He wants to be there. Yeah, mascot. He wants to be there as a baseball player, and he's about playing baseball. It's what he's done his whole life, his whole professional life. So he's not playing baseball at an especially high level right now. And if you look at the numbers, he's hitting 149. The OPS is like in the 400s. He's striking out a lot, especially for him. You know, his last 40 plate appearances, roughly 20 of them have been strikeouts. So he's striking out way too much. This is not, if they had called him up for the Red Series, it would have been a PR stunt. And look, I'll be perfectly blunt here. Like, I hope he comes up to the major leagues. I think it'd be cool. I think it would be something different. I would enjoy covering that and watching that unfold. So honestly, I hope it happens. But to do it this week when he still has not found his rhythm against Triple A pitching, I don't know who it's for at that point. Are you doing it as a favor to the Reds? Do you think your fans are going to be that thrilled with it? Certainly you're not doing Joey Votto any favors. You're not doing Stuart Baroa or John Schneider any favors. I just think it makes sense to wait. And there's still time. There is still time for him to get his timing down, for him to get his swing right, and to be promoted. Maybe in a couple weeks when rosters expand, that could be the time to do it. I'm not ruling anything out, but I think he's got to get his swing right first.
Yeah, I think the cynical thing a lot of people would say would be, oh, it's a marketing stunt. The Blue Jays want to sell tickets. If the Blue Jays want to sell tickets, they should print up like 15,000 Joey Cook's, you know, barbecue aprons or something with Joey Loperfido's face on it. And then you'll sell tickets. Like, reliably, the two things that have reliably worked for selling tickets are A, winning, being competitive, and B, giving something away.
Giveaways.
People, I really do not think there would be a substantial increase in ticket sales to see Joey Votto at Rogers Center. When Joey Votto came here on what seemed like a retirement tour the last time that he was in town with the Cincinnati Reds, he barely got an ovation. Like, Miguel Cabrera got a bigger ovation than him, and Miguel Cabrera has no connection to this city whatsoever. So, look, I agree with you that, it's not out of the question that Joey Votto gets up to Toronto. I think that if he is healthy and feeling good, if he's productive, if he feels like he's seeing the ball well, and he feels like he's capable of hitting big league pitching, I think the Blue Jays would be open to bringing him to Toronto, even though they're uncompetitive. I think they think that there would be a benefit to him being around the environment and around some of the young players who are trying to break into the big leagues right now and learn how things go. Like, the Blue Jays are in this weird spot right now where George Springer and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are the quote-unquote veterans here. And sure, Springer's a veteran, but Vlad's 25. He's younger than some of the players that he is a veteran to. He's younger than Will Wagner.
Did you see Vladdy's... Did you see Vladdy's comment? I think it was on Instagram when Bowden Francis won Player of the Week, and Vladdy goes, "Good job, kid." Bowden Francis is 2 years older than him.
Right. But, you know, I've had people with the Blue Jays come up to me unsolicited recently and talk about what a leadership role Vlad's taken on and how engaged Springer has been with helping some of the young guys, get blooded into the majors. Chris Bassett talked about it when Shai and I were talking to him. I spoke to Kevin Gausman about it recently, about, just helping some of these young guys off the field in terms of just, how a clubhouse works, how you tip clubbies, the bus schedules and the commitments of meetings and just all the off-field stuff you don't see that young players are kind of unfamiliar with. I think that the Blue Jays have been really happy with how the veterans who are left have impacted that and taken ownership of kind of being a leadership group. It's tough. You really change your clubhouse when you trade Justin Turner and Danny Jansen and some really strong veteran leaders. So that's all to say, I think the Blue Jays would welcome Joey Votto into their environment to be one of those leaders if he is healthy and productive. But what I can also say is that the last thing Joey Votto wants to do is take a roster spot from one of the young players on the Blue Jays getting opportunities right now if he doesn't deserve it. If he is uncompetitive at the big league level, he absolutely does not want to take a roster spot from a Davis Schneider, an Addison Barger, a Stuart Baroa, a Will Wagner, a whoever, just for this weird retirement tour or this weird movie moment. Joey would under no circumstances accept that. He wants to be capable of playing at the big league level if he's coming up.
This is not someone who wants to be handed something on a silver platter. So I think if he gets to the point that he's barreling balls up, he's seeing the ball really well, then, hey, call him up. At that point, let's say he takes the roster spot of a Stuart Baroa, because if Votto proves that, hey, he's ready for the major leagues, to me, you could make the case that, oh, he's taking time away from Stuart Baroa. But I'll say this. One, Stuart Baroa has had 11 at-bats in August, 11 plate appearances. So it's not like he's getting a ton of developmental time here. He could go to AAA. He could play every day. That would be fine. And if Stuart Baroa is destined for stardom, then a couple more weeks in the minor leagues are not going to stand in the way. He will reach that ceiling eventually regardless. He'll have that chance. But if that means you can get Joey Votto around some of these other players, have him be a positive influence, and sure, give the fans something along the way, then I think that could be really good.
Let me preface this by saying that I really enjoy Stuart Baroa as a person, and I really enjoy interacting with him on a daily basis, and he is provided like an unquantifiable but noticeably impactful clubhouse energy during his extended big league stints this season. Everyone loves having him around. Great dude. But if I were running the Blue Jays right now, I would be optioning him and calling up Nathan Lucas. Because if somebody does deserve to be in the big leagues right now, it's Nathan Lucas, a guy who has more than proved himself at the AAA level, a guy who, you know, does everything that Stuart Baroa does, if not better, a guy whose career has been just so star-crossed the last couple of years. Every time the Blue Jays have had an opportunity for him, he's either been injured or he's been ill. And then whenever he's actually been raking and performing really well, the Blue Jays haven't had an opening for him. He flat out made the team out of spring training, earned a spot on this roster. The Blue Jays just couldn't carry another left-handed hitting outfielder at the time. And then when they started selling off parts and guys were injured and they had openings, lo and behold, Nathan Lucas tears a ligament in his thumb and like misses 2 months, the worst possible time this year. So that's the move that I would be making like right now. And I actually do think we are going to see Nathan Lucas before the end of the season and possibly sooner rather than later. I think Jonathan Class A is the guy who comes up in September when that extra roster spot opens up. But I think we could see Nathan Lucas sooner than that. I also think, and this is just my gut feel, this is just an opinion, we will see Joey Votto at the big league level this year, later this season.
Yeah.
Because when I see him with like a 40% strikeout rate right now, a AAA with like an ABS system, a challenge system, that's to me Joey Votto sort of pressing the issue a little bit and still figuring it out. Like, this is still Joey Votto. This is a guy with extremely good idea of the strike zone. I think that in another week or two, he kind of gets his feet under him, finds his swing, starts seeing the ball better, gets hot for like 7 to 10 games, and then we see him for the last week or two of the season. Again, just opinion, not reporting, but that's what I think is going to happen.
I think that pathway exists. Also, Nathan Lucas might be becoming your Ahmed Rosario.
100%. Yep. No, I'm in the tank. 100%.
Yeah.
He deserves it, man. I've never felt so bad for a guy, really. Like, just the way his career has gone. He's a big leaguer. And people at the Blue Jays will tell you that on the record.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He is a major league player. He is capable. If he was with Oakland or the Angels or, I don't know, like Seattle when they were having outfield problems, he would have been up. He would have been an everyday big leaguer. He's just like in an organization where there hasn't been a clear path for him. And when there has been, he has just repeatedly had a super unfortunate, untimely injury.
If he was on the White Sox, he might have been in Texas representing them at the All-Star game. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows what could have been?
Since 2022 at AAA with the Bisons, with substantial playing time, Nathan Lucas is hitting .316 with a .388 on base and a .466 slug. That is a .125 weighted runs created plus, 25% better than the league average AAA player. And he's like almost 30. Not just the production, but also like the off-field stuff, the clubhouse stuff, the character stuff, plus defense, plus base running, plus attention to detail, plus understanding of the game. Like, he just checks every box. He's a big leaguer, and I hope he's up soon. And I actually think he will be up soon.
There it is. You heard it here first, folks.
And he had 3 hits off Paul Skeens in a AAA game earlier this year. All right, I'm done now.
Let's pivot over to Vlad Jr.
1-0. Guerrero swings and hammers it way back to left field. That one's hunting the third deck. It's way gone. A sky-scraping blast for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., his 26th of the year, and it's 1-0 Blue Jays.
Well, welcome to the big leagues, Julian Aguiar. You can't hang those breaking balls up here against Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He absolutely smoked that thing into the third deck in left field. What a swing.
Thinking about this as far as leverage, right? And the Blue Jays sometimes frame this as sharing risk, and that's a reasonable way to look at things, but the more I see Vlad contribute and sustain this level of performance, which certainly he's done in the last week, I just tend to think that the leverage is shifting more and more over to him. And I think at this point, I'll be curious to hear what you think about this, Arden, but I think at this point, the way he's going, if he sustains something, you know, I'm not saying quite at this level, but something between this and, you know, let's just say he sustains his career production, his career level of production for the next year plus, then it almost doesn't matter if the Blue Jays see him as a $300 million player, because someone else will. Like, he's going to be a 26-year-old player when he hits free agency, and he's got a lifetime OPS plus of 136. He's a 165 this year. He's had two MVP caliber seasons in the last four. That is a $300 million player. Someone's going to pay him. So to me, it's really becoming more a question of whether it's the Blue Jays or whether it's someone else.
I bet you somebody already does view him that way. It only takes one owner, right? And right. Vlad isn't just a sensational talent, which he very much is, but he's also somebody who clearly resonates with fans, and not only in Toronto, like across the league.
Oh, he's a global. He's a star. He's a national star.
100%.
International star.
Yeah, part of it's that everybody remembers his dad and what a unique and fun player his dad was, but also, like, Vlad himself is a unique and fun player.
I mean, Will Wagner had a famous dad too, you know? Like, Vladdy's got some star power.
Dalton Varsho had a, you know, pretty had a dad who was involved in the game in both a playing and coaching standpoint for a long time. But, like, Vlad is his own star for, like, a lot of the, and clearly, like, if he was, you know, hitting like Dalton Varsho is, it'd be a little bit different. But he's not. He's hitting like friggin' Shohei Ohtani is. You know, like, he's an unbelievable offensive talent. Plus, there is the flair, as we've discussed, you know, the slides on second base and the interactions with other players, like the smile that's always on his face, the undeniable joy that he has for baseball, the love that he has for this game, just some of those affable characteristics. Like, people really do feel a connection with him, which is really impressive for somebody who, like, you know, speaks the language, but, like, doesn't do many Chris Rose podcasts for an hour.
If only. Wonder what Vladdy thinks about the offseason pivot.
Yeah, I mean, this is a story for another day. But so I bet you that already there is an owner out there who's like, not only is this guy going to be in his prime and super productive for me on the field, but also I'm going to make a lot of money selling this guy's jerseys and having him drawing fans to my ballpark.
Yeah, I think without a doubt. I mean, even if you look at, like, the Padres, teams that have historically been big spenders on elite talents, like, I bet AJ Preller would go after Vlad hard. And the Padres, I know they've had an ownership change since their owner passed away, but, you know, the Phillies, you could move Bryce Harper back to the outfield. Like, there's so many teams. The Yankees, imagine Judge, Soto, and Vlad. How good that would be. Like, although the Jays should sign Soto. I would be so prepared to offer like $550 for Soto. He's so good. And if you pair two, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think the Jays have to be cautious about being used again. Not that I don't think they were used in the Shohei Ohtani case.
Careful,
then.
Careful.
Yeah, I should say.
Careful.
I never thought they were used. I don't think they were used with Shohei Ohtani. I do think that they were a viable choice that was not as appealing to him as the Dodgers were. With Soto, it's a different question. I think there is risk of being used because Scott Boras would use the Blue Jays. He would.
If Shohei wanted to use a team for leverage, he doesn't have to get on a plane and fly to Dunedin and have all these meetings with Mark Shapiro and all these people. They all meet like ownership and like jump through all these hoops. Like, you can just like leak a rumor that the Yankees are in.
He's actually
considering returning to the Angels. That's all you really had to do to create that leverage.
I never thought that he was using the Blue Jays. I thought that interest was real, and that's certainly what various Blue Jays people thought and felt. But with Juan Soto, he would use the Blue Jays. And so you got to be careful about that. But
would he,
you know,
or would his agent use the Blue Jays?
Yeah, someone he employs, someone he pays would use the Blue Jays. I don't think that that's inherently wrong. It's part of the game. But they should sign him, but I'm not holding my breath, and I'm not saying that anyone should hold their breath on that front.
To me, Vlad is like in that class of Soto, Judge, Ohtani. I think Bobby Witt Jr. belongs in there. Just like the superstars of the game right now. For me, it's always been you start with the Devers extension as a framework, and then you just sort of move it in either direction based on inflation, position, longevity, whatever you want to do with options, opt-outs, deferrals, etc. Like, but to me, the framework is the Devers 315 over 10.
I would nudge it up higher than that personally, but I think that is the best comp. I don't think there's a better comp. End of the day, we're talking about a player who's on a Hall of Fame track. He's got 20 mm-hmm. WAR in his career. He's on pace this year. He's got, you know, set aside the jersey sales and the fun slides we talked about last week and all this stuff. He's on pace right now for a 6 WAR season. So no matter what you're doing, if you're maybe you're Chris Sale, maybe you're Gunnar Henderson, maybe you're Vlad Jr. If you're contributing 6 WAR for your team, that's phenomenal. And we should also note that this is happening in his age 25 season. You think about past Blue Jays stars, Josh Donaldson, Encarnacion, Bautista. We had extension discussions about all those guys. And yet, when Jose Bautista was 25 years old, he was playing in Indianapolis for the Pirates AAA team. Edwin Encarnacion was like striking out way too much for the Reds. Josh Donaldson was a friggin' catcher, you know, in Oakland. So he has achieved a level of success so early in his career that it still leaves him a lot of time just to be prime Vladdy. And, you know, I think that that's part of the reason the team should be legitimately excited to sign this guy. We'll see what that looks like, but I think it's becoming really interesting.
Oh, and he's also Canadian.
Yeah, he is.
Right? Technically. Like, here's the thing that I will also say. If I was advising Vlad, like, coming off of the season that he is right now, I mean, so what? He's making 20 mil this year. Like, what do you think he gets in ARB next year, Ben? Like, 27, 28? 26?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe yeah, 26, levy. 27, sure.
Right. I would be telling him, like, hey, you've already pocketed, and I don't know what his career earnings are to this point, but maybe it's 40, 45 million. Just take your 26, 27 next year, pocket that, you're good for life, and go into free agency, and don't just deal with, like, don't just negotiate with one team, negotiate with 30. Like, why, like, go create your market, because that's only going to help you, and there's no reason to believe that you're going to suffer some sort of, like, substantial performance decline next year.
No.
If I was advising him, I would say only sign an extension if you get, like, absolute market value and perhaps even beyond, because, like, you can go to market in a year's time, and I can only imagine what the bidding could get to if you got various very motivated owners trying to one-up each other to sign you.
Yeah, after Soto signs for $550, signing Vlad for $450 might seem like a bargain in a couple years' time, you know, or not even a couple years, in a year and a bit. So, you know, he's in a great position. This is why I say that the leverage has shifted to Vladdy. The Jays don't really have a lot of leverage, which is okay. It doesn't mean they can't get a deal done. But Vladdy is in such a strong position here. If I was advising him, I would say, you know what? Seems like you like the Jays. We'll be open to an extension here. But let's set an opening day deadline for extension talks. If there's no deal done, ink on paper, by opening day 2025, we're going to market, and we're also going to let that be known publicly. And so spring training, sure, they can come to us with a deal. But other than that, it's going to be free agency. And they can bid then just as any other team would. No ill will, no hard feelings. But, you know, you want to focus on the field and helping the team win. So it's an opening day deadline. That's what I would say.
No, that's certainly a tactic that a lot of players in his position have utilized in the past. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. And, yeah, don't misconstrue what I'm saying as, you know, I would advise Vladdy just not to discuss extension with the Blue Jays. Like, answer the phone. Always. Like, just, like, yeah, we're open to talking extension, but our price is market rate. Like, our price is not any cheaper. Like, we're, you know, you want to share risk? But yeah, your risk is that I'm going to go to the market and get some other offers.
Yeah. Your risk is that I play for the Red Sox now, right? And you guys are looking at a team where Ernie Clement, Spencer Horwitz, and Will Wagner are the middle of the order. That's real risk for the Jays.
Yes.
It's real. So, without Vladdy, they don't have a lot of power.
So I'm setting my price extremely high, and I am not budging from it.
I mean, market rate, that's like 40 mil a year if you look at Judge, right? Soto might push it higher. Soto might push it to 50. So is market rate 45 a year for Vlad? Because in that case, the number doesn't start with a 3. It starts with a 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't sat down and like done the math.
Yeah,
but
no,
I'm
totally
sure Vladdy's people have. And
this is where to me, if you get a Vlad Guerrero Jr. extension done, and it's like in the 300s, let's say for argument's sake it's 380 over 11. Great. Honestly, if
you'll
you're
never
the Jays,
catch me saying that's a bad deal. You'll never hear me
right.
say that. Yeah.
It's 11 years of a prime player. I mean, you got to invest in someone. When you start charting out the different possibilities for what the Blue Jays' next good team looks like, Vlad Jr. is always a part of it in my mind.
There's no way that, like, there's a press conference in the Rogers Center, like, media conference room, you know, I don't know, 2 weeks before spring training, and Mark Shapiro's up there with Ed Rogers and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Vlad Sr., and they're announcing this extension, regardless of the price tag, like, within reason, obviously, but it's not going to be out of reason. I'm going to say that's a great deal. What a great day for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell you right now. I'm not going to criticize that deal. I'm just not.
Yeah.
And sure, there might be, you know, if it is like 10, 11 years and you're in the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. business at like 36 and he's a DH only and has got the lowest sprint speed in the league and he's just like selling out, cheating the fastballs and striking out a bunch and doesn't look like the same guy. Who cares? Because in the 10 years prior, like, you've had an incredible player to build around, a guy in his prime and who, for all the other reasons that we just cited, is great for the business of the Toronto Blue Jays. So it's a great deal. I'm not going to criticize that.
Vladdy, he's playing some third. I think his best position is first base. And I think that he loved the flexibility, but I don't really love the idea of going out and signing a first baseman. I like the idea of Vladdy there. What do you think?
No, I don't like the idea of having a... Because if you're going out and signing a first baseman, like, you're probably signing them for quite a bit of term, right? Like, are you moving Vlad off of first for, like, I don't know, pick your mediocre first baseman?
No,
I haven't looked
to... It would either be Christian Walker or Pete Alonso.
Right. It's for, like, you know, somebody who's going to be at first base for the next 6 to 7 years. And here's the thing, like, as much as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. can play third base right now, I do think that before he's 30, he's going to be a full-time first baseman. Like, not, you know, you're not going to have that option of him playing third as regularly as he can now. So if you are intending to be in the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. business beyond next year, you need to keep first base somewhat flexible, in my opinion. Now, you could always like trade the guy that you sign and just kind of like try to win in the next couple of years and then try to move off of that first baseman. But I still don't love the idea. I want Vlad to be getting the lion's share of work at first base next season while playing third base more often than he did this year. Because what Chris Bassett said to Chris Rose about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and about he can play third base more regularly than he can. Certain people are skeptical as to the Blue Jays' reason why he's not playing third base that much. It's not the first time I've heard that from somebody in the Blue Jays clubhouse. Not the first time I've heard that from veteran players in there. It is the first time I've heard it on record. But I can tell you that that's not just Chris Bassett. Like, that opinion is shared in the Blue Jays clubhouse that Vlad should be playing third base much more often than he is.
I think that if Vladdy's playing third a couple times a week, the vibe is like, man, this guy will do anything. He's helping our team. Like, he's such a team player. If he's playing there 5 or 6 days a week and kind of, you know, let's face it, he's not Matt Chapman over there. And just when it comes to the footwork and the range, at that point, it's like, oh, you know, he's not a great third baseman, but, you know, he's trying his best. I prefer the vibe where it's like he's really helping the team. And I just think it's better for the whole group. So that's part of my reasoning there.
It's better for Vlad if he plays more third base too, obviously, if he can sell himself on the market as somebody who's capable of doing that.
Yeah. Although I think the bat does a lot of the selling.
There, you're not signing him for defense. Sorry, you mentioned first baseman. It just reminded me of something with Votto. The CBT issue with Votto, that will not be an impediment to him coming up, by the way. I've heard from multiple people that the Blue Jays have left themselves enough buffer under the CBT to bring up Votto and not go over it. Now, obviously, like, there's certain things with the CBT that are kind of out of the Blue Jays' control. Like, Justin Turner has bonuses and IKF has bonuses. IKF has plate appearance ones. And I believe Justin Turner's are, like, literally just on the active roster at a certain date ones. So, you know, not injured. And as far as I know, he's not on the IL. So those are likely to cash in, and that changes the calculation. If the Blue Jays had like a couple injuries and had to select a minor leaguer to their 40, I mean, that would impact calculations. So it's not like it's a fluid thing, and there's somebody in the Blue Jays front office whose job it is actually every day to monitor this and to kind of update the formula and, you know, just keep track of where the Blue Jays stand in regards to the CBT and be in contact with the league about, hey, if this then that, is that the case? Or if I make these certain adjustments in my calculation, like, is that correct? Just constantly double checking, because the Blue Jays didn't get this close to the CBT to finish like a hair over it. They will finish under the CBT this year. They didn't get this close to be like, oh, we were 50K over. They 100% will be under, but they, as far as I've been told by multiple people, they have room under the CBT to call up Joey Votto at the prorated portion of his $2 million deal. And even if things changed around him that made it a little bit borderline, I think then they would just renegotiate with Joey and work it out. So that's not going to be an impediment.
I agree. It won't be an impediment. I don't see the need to renegotiate either, because, and I don't think that that would really be on the table. I doubt his agent will be on side with that. But I think that what can happen is that if it takes him 2-3 weeks to get his swing going in Buffalo, then that's 2 or 3 more weeks where he's not making his major league prorated amount. And that's not the goal. Obviously, everyone would prefer if he was hitting, you know, 5 home runs a week at Buffalo and it becomes an easy decision. But the reality is that might push the decision back and just make it so that the Blue Jays are ending up paying less of that $2 million prorated.
Yeah, the Blue Jays' goal at the deadline was to maximize return in terms of prospects and just like refreshing the minor league system. But I mean, clearly an ancillary goal was to get closer to the CBT and get under it if they could. You know, they described it as a nice to have rather than a must have, but they have it now. And so now that they have it, there is no reason to go above it because of the impacts on draft pick compensation. If you wanted to sign a qualified offer free agent, or even the draft picks you get back from your own qualified free agents in the future. So, you know, those are meaningful. And now that the Blue Jays are under it, they should absolutely stay under it. And they will finish the season under the CBT.
Exactly. And those are for baseball reasons, for the benefit of your farm system. It's not so that, you know, Rogers can save a dollar here or a dollar there. So,
yeah, 100%. That's important to clarify, too. This is for the, you know, the impact on draft pick compensation is the big driver here. It's not to save $1 million.
Now, big picture, do owners benefit from having a system where reduced spending helps the baseball operations? Yes, but that is a discussion for a CBA podcast that we will not be having today.
We'll be breaking down the formula this offseason on athletics. Yeah.
Stay tuned for that. I'm sure the downloads will be off the charts. But look, thanks for everyone who stuck with us this far into this week's episode. Thanks very much for joining us on ATL. It's always lots to discuss with the Jays. Thanks as well to Sho Ali and to Nick Andrade for their help putting this together. Thanks to Arden for his insight. That is going to be it for this week on At the Letters. We will talk to you soon.